Hi, this is Leonard Peikoff answering questions emailed to me about Ayn Rand's philosophy of objectivism. I take questions of general interest, not technical philosophy and not practical politics. I do this every week or two and post it on my website. It's also available on iTunes. If you want to ask me a philosophical question, feel free. Just send it to leonard@peikoff.com. And my last name is Peikoff, P as in Peter, E-I-K-O-F-F as in off. Let's start with a question I've never had before. Is it a mistake to entertain a strong desire for something that is impossible, or to fantasize about what one would do in life if circumstances were different? For example, would it be wrong for a blind person to burn with desire to become a pilot, or for a person to spend large amounts of time thinking about what he would do if he could go back 20 years with the knowledge that he has now? As presented, you're not trying to learn from the 20 years. You're not trying to figure out a way to restore your eyesight. As presented, yes, this is 100% mistake. To have a brief desire to become something impossible, to have an idle occasional fantasy about what I would have done different if I'd known, that's fine. But to do it the way you describe it here, a burn with desire, large amounts of time, that is thoroughly self-destructive. It completely takes you away from the reality of your life. It is the mental equivalent of joining a monastery, cutting yourself off from action, from value, from gain. It is just as senseless as saying, what about if I have a burning desire to jump unaided to the moon? Is that okay? Well, it is a psychological problem if that is your desire. What if you have a desire, a burning desire, to douse yourself in oil and set yourself afire? It's just a more rapid way of destroying yourself, destroying your values, destroying your interests, destroying your mind. Remember that value is defined by Ayn Rand as that which one acts to gain and keep. And in these cases, by definition, you can't act to gain and you can't get. If so, it is not of value. It is an escape from reality. And my only advice to you is divert your passion and your fantasy to something you are going to achieve in reality. There's plenty of things a blind person can do, which are great mental challenges beyond becoming a pilot, and there's plenty of things you can do, even if you're 65, leave you ample room for self-expression. No matter how bad you mangle, how badly you mangled your life 20 years ago, live it now. Is it right for parents to compel their children? For example, when a parent forbids a child from engaging in dangerous activity. Now, I've answered this many times, so I will be brief. And the reason I'm being brief is that there are a lot of new people joining the podcast all the time, judging by the questions I get. So some of them I have to give a glimmer of the objectivist answer, even though these are covered at length in the objectivist literature. But in a word, certainly a parent has the right to compel, to engage, use physical force on children. He has the obligation to do so if he judges that that is a necessity of the child's welfare. The child has only one right, the right to life. The parent cannot do something to threaten or destroy his life. The child cannot claim the corollary rights, which pertain only to a rational being, and he is not yet in control of his rational faculty. So the children can't say, I have a right to do whatever I want, liberty, or to keep whatever I want, property, or to pursue whatever makes me happy. When he reaches the age of maturity, he says goodbye, and at that very moment, he is obligated to independently to support himself. Don't take objectivism. No man can use force against another as some kind of out-of-context absolute. You can use force against others in wartime, if you're arresting a criminal, and certainly against children or against dogs. So you got to know a context. Here again, a question, a variant of which has been asked over and over, and I can't keep doing it. People who feel guilty about taking advantage of government programs, they would get a benefit from it, but isn't it wrong to take part? And this guy mentions the Cash for Clunkers program, but I had so many different examples of it. And my standard answer is, as long as you are not expanding the government, you're not demanding an extension of this program, more time, more businesses, whatever, you're merely getting back some of the money that has already been extorted from you, go ahead, do it. That's the only way you'll get even a partial recompense for all the money that has been, or if you're young, will be extorted from you. Next, is it possible for a mystic leader to be morally guilty of murder? And then the person gives the question, a student he knew, heavily propagandized by the church, his parents totally approved, and he ultimately committed suicide, and they think because he gave up on life owing to this brainwashing. First of all, I would say that proselytizing, if there is no force involved, is not engendered by the government, cannot be condemned regardless of the nature of the ideas. If these people believe, for whatever reason or lack of reason, that this is the truth, that people should know it, no one can say about that sheer act that it is wrong. It's certainly not the government, because if there's to be any freedom of thought, the government has to stay out of all judgments of truth or falsity. Now, let's suppose the case that the person proselytizing with the group is not only admittedly irrational, but explicitly so. As, for instance, the church, in its repeated recourse to faith and endorsement of contradictions, or Kant, with his whole nihilistic attack on every fundamental, then, of course, these people are immoral. They are evading, not just here or there on some superficial topic, but on the most fundamental level of the essence of reality. So in that act, if you call those mystic leaders, they are morally guilty of the fundamental crime. But now, since it's fundamentals, that means, and if they do proselytize, they are going to be spreading irrational philosophy throughout the world insofar as there's no opposition. And all of the consequences of this are going to take place. And that includes what the Catholics did to the West during the Middle Ages and what Kant has done to the modern world. Or in other words, mass starvation, torture, and slaughter. Now, this goes far beyond being morally guilty for somebody's suicide. These people are morally guilty of mass murder. Absolutely morally guilty. They are killers in every sense, but one. They're not killers in the physical sense, that they went up to somebody and stabbed him, and therefore they are outside the province of the government. All you can do is condemn them, but denounce them, refute them, but you can't do any more to an immorality like this, even if it leads to the most monstrous consequences. Crime, in the sense of punishable by the government, begins when physical force or threat begins, not when depraved ideas a generation later will unleash the physical force. Next, I'm trying to take these in the order they came, so there's huge jumps from one type of subject to another, but I'm up to the end of November now. Is gambling a legitimate form of entertainment? Yes. Why not? I mean, if you're addicted, if you're obsessed, if you think that winning at craps proves that you have a metaphysical in with reality, then that's wrong. But, you can do that with 100 different things. It doesn't have to be inherent in gambling. I don't see anything wrong with gambling. Is it moral to gamble for a living? Again, I don't see why not. The higher forms of gambling take skill, and as far as I know, those are the only ones where you can really make money. For instance, the World Championship of Poker. And those are often also a form of entertainment. Now, I wouldn't myself go into that. Although once when I was very young, I confess, I sat for 12 unbroken hours at a blackjack table in Reno, Nevada. Now, I never did it again, but I don't consider I was immoral at the time. I certainly wouldn't do it for a living, partly because I found it very boring after the last few hours came by. Why was a great mind like Ayn Rand unable to catch the evil characters among her one-time associates in the act? Here again, I think I've answered this a number of times. Judging people is the hardest intellectual task there is. In my opinion, it still is the hardest task. And Ayn Rand, at the end of her life, told me that she knew less about people at the end than she thought she knew at the beginning. Simply because they are so bewildering, inconsistent. She went generally by their avowed statements and actions. Not by their emotional projections or vibrations, although she tried to pick that up, but she tried to go by what she could tell objectively. And the problem is that there are great, great actors. They don't all go on stage that can take over the ideas of a philosophy, grasp exactly how to formulate them. They don't in any way sound like a parrot, and you can see them on the stage and you would swear this man 100% understands these ideas, completely integrated into his life. It's inconceivable that this is an act, and yet it is an act. Now, how one ferrets this out, especially if you don't know the private life of the person, I do not know. Now, sometimes Ayn Rand would give the benefit of the doubt, on the grounds that it's possible that this is of value. Sometimes that proved to be a mistake. I mean, if there was nothing definite and some seemingly good quality, sometimes the evil, like a virus, nourished itself because someone who was considered, you know, really honest and rational would vouch for someone who would then carry on the act, and it was a whole, like, self-replicating chain. I think another problem was everybody necessarily, to some extent, projects that others are like themselves. And if she heard someone clearly and so on present ideas, she couldn't imagine, at least for quite a while in her life, that they didn't mean it. Now, I learned from her and from experience never to go by what people say. I have seen people say how much they love Atlas Shrugged doesn't mean anything at all. I'm completely, if I hear that, is just the same as if somebody said a stitch in time saves nine. It has no meaning to me at all. I rather tend to go by my impression when I meet somebody, if I like them or not, unless I see something obvious which I hate, and then pursue in a casual way from that basis if I can try to get some idea, but not just their statements of agreement with objectivism, which I simply discount. And if I can't get any sense, I just say, forget it. On the whole, I regard this whole issue as unknown to me. And Ayn Rand once said that psychology or judging people is in the state today that physics was at the time of Thales. We have a few observations and no clue thereafter. Thank you. If you want to know more about Ayn Rand's philosophy, I invite you to ask me a question. I can't answer them all, but I do read them all. Just write to leonard@peekoff.com. And if you haven't already done so, start by reading Ayn Rand's two most famous novels, The Fountainhead and Atlas Shrugged. Thanks for listening.